Good morning, everyone. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. The Mary Griffith Show is underway. It's the fourth Friday of the month. One of our most popular shows is about to begin, starring Rob Mellon, the director of the Historical Society of Quincy in Adams County. And he's over the phone, even though we could probably look out the window and see each other from his office. And Rob, if we get cut off, just be sure to hop on over. I'll take a commercial break and you can be here live, okay?
I know I'm normally there live. I'm sorry about that.
That's
today.
Okay. We all forget sometimes, but we get more comments on the appearances, not only by you, but anyone who comes on about the Historical Society. People really love history. So what have you got planned for us today? Wow us, Rob Mellon.
Well, you know, we got a lot going on at the Historical Society. We're planning right now to open the museum on April the 23rd. You know, the museum's been closed for quite some time. And so we're really excited. We got some great exhibits that are going to open up. The Underground Railroad exhibit, we're going to feature Father Tolton, New Philadelphia, and some other, you know, things like that. And then in the main exhibit hall, we're going to have the Golden Age of Quincy. And that will be the 1880s and 1890s. So,
okay.
And that'll feature like a lot of the businesses from that time. And we have some artifacts, of course. We got a lot of great artifacts, and we'll be showing those artifacts. And it'll take us up probably 1880s to about 1900.
You know, it's interesting to think that that's the Golden Age. That's so long ago. I wish Quincy could grow and prosper like it did back then. But really, basically, we've been about the same population and same strength ever since that golden era. So maybe if we go back and revisit that, we'll be re-inspired to grow a little bit.
Well, there was a lot of building going on back
then,
actually. If you remember, 1888 is when the Free and Public Library, which is now the History Museum, was built. The Newcomb was built at that time, right in that time period. The Granite Bank building was. So a lot of those iconic buildings downtown, that's from that time period. And we just haven't constructed those types of things, you know, since then. We've lost a lot of great structures here in Quincy. You know, we had the train station, that huge, massive spire and brick train station down at on Oak Street, which most people don't remember, but that was torn down in the 60s. The Octagonal, which was John Wood's second mansion and even bigger than the mansion we have today, and that was torn down in the early 50s. And then, of course, the courthouse, which is used to look like almost like a Capitol building, and that, of course, was damaged with the tornado the day that Franklin Roosevelt died in 1945. So we've lost a lot of iconic buildings, but some still remain, like the History Museum downtown.
It is interesting when you contrast and compare. You talk about the style of architecture for our first Adams County courthouse. Compare that to the courthouse that was built in the 50s, which is very, you know, just very plain, to put it bluntly. Plain red brick, but very functional, very serviceable, but not the big, ornate, ostentatious, here's the seat of our government, kind of look at me in awe and wonder. It was very, well, just fit into the landscape a little bit less noticeable, not saying, shouting to everyone, here I am. And so sometimes when buildings get torn down by tornadoes or whatever, it's an interesting way to take stock in how our architectural preferences and how our architectural styles change.
Well, and if people are interested in what our courthouse looked like, there was one that was very similar by the same architect. It's in Lafayette, Indiana. So if someone would like to do a little Google search, which I've done before, it's amazing looking, and that's pretty much what our courthouse looked like. So we have some photographs from the past. We've actually had some photographs after the damage here at the Historical Society. But if someone today was interested in what our courthouse would look like today, they can Google the Lafayette, Indiana courthouse, and it's pretty much designed just like that.
Yeah, same architect. Let's talk a little bit. Let's backtrack just a little bit. You're going to be reopening the museum. You're going to start up on exhibits again. And the Underground Railroad is a huge part of Quincy's history. And with the Eels House and Father Tolton being the first black priest in America, there is such a story to tell in Quincy. And I think that this can also be a great stopping off point for tourism development. I think a lot of people from the Chicagoland area would be very willing to come to Quincy and spend their tourism dollars here to see an exhibit like that.
I think you're exactly right, Mary. I think we really have some untapped resources. The people who live here or grew up here know the history of the city, and it goes back in a lot of connections. People always say that the roads always lead back to here one way or another. We have all these different connections. We don't highlight that enough. I know that there's a real effort to do that, and of course the Historical Society is always here to try to tell the history and the county story.
The Underground Railroad, do you have any idea? I know of several stops in Quincy and Adams County, but are we going to be able to see, I mean, how much of this is documented? How many stops were there on the Underground Railroad?
You know, this is the tough one because obviously it was against the law.
Yeah, nobody wanted to publicize it.
All right.
It wasn't like a B&B vacancy.
And remember Quincy's location position. Because there was the largest amount of slaveholders in Missouri was in that central kind of path across the state, kind of the northern central part of the state. That's where the majority of slaves, because Missouri was a slave state, that's where the majority of slaves were. Southern part of Missouri is too rocky and hilly and so forth. It wasn't really conducive to slavery. So there was this idea, if you were in that northeastern part of Missouri, and you were a runaway slave, there were locations and people to help you in Quincy, like the Mission Institute and Dr. Eales and others. Dr. Eales was trying to get the runaway to the Mission Institute, which was started by David Nelson, which is a group of missionaries, anti-slavery, and so forth. But the goal, once you got them to Quincy, was to move them along. So they wouldn't stay here for very long. If this is station number one, obviously you don't stay at station number one. Your ultimate objective is to get way farther north and even into Canada. So while there are some locations and there were some real efforts here, but those were the minority. The vast majority of people, even if they didn't support slavery, they thought these abolitionists in that time period, 1830s and 40s, and into the 1850s, were troublemakers, and they kind of wanted to stay away from them. So I don't think they stayed here very long. So there may have been some locations. Dr. Eales, we know, is a famous case. But if they came to Quincy, may have gotten some help, but they didn't stay for very long, and then they were moved further along the, if we want to call it, the Underground Railroad.
Yeah, I know, you know, they came across from Missouri here. They also came up from Alton and had passed through Alton. And I know that the old Dieters family home, and there's a wonderful book written about that. When I was a kid, I was friends with one of the Dieters girls, and they had those secret passages in their house. It was always fascinating to think, wow, you know, the family that lived here, you know, harbored fugitive slaves and did so at great risk to themselves. So this is a really an exhibit that we're looking forward to. What else is coming up for the Historical Society?
You know, one of the things that we're really proud of now is our little magazine that comes out quarterly. I know that you get it, the Governor's Post. That's coming out at the end of next week, so people can expect to see that. There's some really great stories.
Oops, we dropped out, so maybe Rob will come across the street. We can only hope. Let's see if we can reconnect with Rob, and we'll take a break, and we'll be right back. Well, magically, and this may be a first for the Mary Griffith Show in all the years I've done it, my guest started on the phone and ends the conversation in person. It can only happen with Rob Mellon, whose office is literally 50 feet from our front door. So welcome back to the second half of the Mary Griffith Show. We're so glad to have you here with us. We talked a little bit about the Underground Railroad. What are some of the other things that are going to be happening? You mentioned the Golden Age of Quincy and how that was such a booming time for our community. What else is ahead for the Historical Society?
Well, I was mentioning that the Governor's Post is actually coming out. There's some great stories in it this time. Mm-hmm. I think people are really going to enjoy those stories. We have this controversy over the very first street sweeper. They called it the gutter snipe. And so we have some images of that from our archive, and people are really like that story. And then, you know, and people are really like it. It's pretty funny. We're also working to help repair the George Rogers Clark statue. In the 1930s, he lost his scabbard. Most people probably don't realize it, but if you go see that, which is a fabulous statue.
And that's in Riverview Park.
It is. It is. And so we're working on that as well. We're doing, in conjunction, obviously, with the park district, But we're doing a number of things like that, and the Governor's Post tells all those stories, tells the story of the George Rogers Clark statue, the gutter snipe, and all kinds of other great stories. So I'm kind of really looking forward to this issue, actually.
When we talk about history, of course, it's always fun to look back. And today here on WTAD, the Steve and Mary Show, every morning we have today's highlight in history from the Associated Press. Today is the anniversary of the first World Trade Center bombing. And so you look back over a period of time now, you know, over 20 years has elapsed, much more than 20 years has elapsed since then. And we're always going to be looking back through a different microscope as it gets wider and wider and farther away. And the Historical Society has a unique mission in Quincy and Adams County because you collect artifacts, but you also help to interpret what these things mean now and what they meant to people then. And I'm so fascinated by this because I've started to collect a few things about COVID-19 from my own personal collection. I don't have children to give them to or anything, and I thought, you know, I'll get these together and give them to the Historical Society because this will be a little snapshot of how COVID-19, for example, affected me. Not that it's going to be some big display someday, but just, for example, my calendar. I had a 2-year calendar. The first year, almost every day, had some kind of arts event, doctor's appointment, meeting for lunch with girlfriends. I mean, every single day had something scribbled in there that Mary Griffith was going to do. Last year, effective March 17th, zippity-doo-dah, you know. So it's just in my own handwriting, you know, again, who cares but it's just the idea that a normal person had all these activities planned and then their life was reduced to this. And the same thing with some of our internal broadcast statements about COVID that I think would not be appropriate for me to share at this time. But looking back later on a lens might be kind of interesting to see what people thought about
that. You know,
that.
There's no question that history continues and grows and expands, and that'll be a part of our local history and our national history moving forward. You know, there's been plenty of things about the pandemic in 1918, and that's turned into museum exhibits. And there's lasting vestiges of that, which people don't realize. In Quincy, you're not supposed to spit on the street. It's against the law. That goes back to that pandemic in 1918. So there's still some lasting effects, and COVID will be no different.
I still don't want people to spit on the street.
No,
but they do it
no.
all the time. But you're right. And again, when we're experiencing history at the moment it happens, because Denise Donnelly-Talcott, my coworker and I, last year, when COVID first hit Quincy, I guess you'll say, I had planned a vacation. And so I had taken the whole week off. And Denise had to do my talk show on March 18th. And all the restaurants were shut down. The businesses were shut down. You know, you could go to the grocery store, but you had to, you know, practically pour chlorine bleach all over yourself. And, you know, she remembers talking about it on the talk show and saying, well, is this legit? Is this going to last? And her guest that day said, who knows? And that's the truth. Who would have thought a whole year later, you know, we're still dealing with vestiges of the pandemic. So sometimes the arc of history, it's very difficult to analyze too close to the event, right?
But it is important to put it into perspective. We've had pandemics like this in the past.
Polio.
And, of course, there were lasting changes in society and how we dealt with one another from that pandemic 100 years ago. And these pandemics do come about every 100 years. So it isn't outside of the normal arc of history. It's kind of right in line with the normal arc of history. But one thing about humanity is we adapt, we figure things out. And instead of this being something terrible and horrible only, which of course it is, you can find ways that we can improve things. People are starting to realize, you mentioned the golden age of Quincy, for example. You don't have to be in Chicago or St. Louis anymore. You could live right here in Quincy in one of our great houses on Main Street, and you can own businesses in Chicago or St. Louis. And I think the pandemic with Zoom and remote type of activities has shown that to be the case.
Well, we just celebrated an anniversary of the founding of Facebook. And Facebook has become so, I'm not on it. I think I'm the only person in the world who doesn't have a Facebook account. But when you think about it, it's really hard for many people to remember life without Facebook. If you want to tell the whole world something, you put it up on Facebook. Whereas in the olden days, I guess you printed a hand flyer and stood on the corner. I mean, things have changed so dramatically. And as historical events happen, the way our whole society interacts with each other changes, and that becomes part of history.
But it is important to remember, human nature hasn't really changed in 10,000 years. So when we're talking about Facebook, it's just human interaction and communication. It's not that much different from when the telegraph came for the first time. And, of course, that was a way that you can communicate across the country. Facebook is just
people would hang out at the telegraph office.
Lincoln included.
Just to hear messages coming in that didn't necessarily have anything to do with them, but that's how they got a lot of their news. And you're right. Lincoln loved to hang out at the telegraph office to kind of hear what was going on.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just that's part of that arc, as you mentioned, of human history as well. I think it is important to remember, human nature, though, hasn't really changed in 10,000 years. So
we still want to be with people, and we'll find some way to somehow communicate and get with people. Because isolation, well, actually, you know, the Supreme Court, I think, has even ruled that putting people in isolation for extended periods of time is cruel and unusual punishment. So we can't.
For some people.
We can't, yeah. Well, I do laugh because a few people I know, the COVID-19 has been the best thing that could possibly happen because nobody gets close to them. You know, it's great. They're just loving it because they want their bubble to be about 18 feet wide. 6 feet is not enough for them. So what else is going on at the Historical Society? As you gradually work towards reopening, we're going to be getting back to full activities. Laura Sievert was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and she said that Lincoln in the District is probably not going to happen this year.
That's correct.
But that, you know, other things will be happening. They're going to try to have some kind of Dogwood celebration. The St. Patrick's Day Parade was just canceled this morning. We're not quite there yet. So what do you envision as the summer and fall for the Historical Society?
We would like to get back to our programs again, and of course we can have mitigating factors, multiple presentations as opposed to one, so we can get more people to see the presentations. But we had you attended many of those presentations. Mm-hmm. Those are good programs.
Oh, they're great.
And we would like to get back to that again. Our tours, our walking tours, and some of the trolley tours we used to do of the breweries and the taverns and the churches, those are all things, and we'd like to do one on the Underground Railroad. Those are all things that we'd like to get back to again. But we're always there for people. People call the Historical Society all the time and ask for information about their family or their home, and we're always there for them. So that part of the Historical Society hasn't really changed. We're still getting those inquiries and requests, which we love to answer. But we'd like to get back to interacting with the public again, getting them into the mansion and getting them into the museum and our great spaces and out into our community and telling our history.
Yeah, we are really going to have to do some work to get children. Next year, if they allow field trips again, just think of all that pent-up demand. This couple of grades have missed, so we might have to do a little double duty next year, but that's okay. You've always got such great volunteers that step up to bat. I'm always amazed that the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County is able to fund itself. It's just amazing because it is definitely a need in our community, but it's not a top-tier need. It's more of a want. We want to be able to understand ourselves. We want to have this deep, rich relationship with our past. But it's not food, water, and shelter. And so how are you surviving financially?
You know, we've made a lot of really good decisions over the past, and that is a testament to the quality of the board members that we've had and still have today. So that's part of it. We didn't have a big ask during the pandemic because we knew that there were a lot of social needs out there, some of those things you just mentioned, food and shelter. We knew that. And so we didn't send out letters and asking for a lot of money. We just kind of tightened our belts during that time. Of course, we didn't have a lot of our programs, but our buildings are the ones that kind of drain a lot of our revenue and so forth. And people realize that, though. So people realize that the museum is important. Everybody knows the mansion is important, and they see that as an icon. Those are iconic buildings, and we're there to protect them. People see that, and so they help us along when they can. And we're hoping to get back to our membership drive again, get more people involved in the Historical Society and let them know what we do. And we're there for the entire county anytime you need us for those types of things. That is important. People know that our history is important. We're there to protect it.
Yeah, that mansion at 12th and State, I know you have taken wisely when things shut down and you couldn't have people walking through there and you couldn't have tours through there, the Historical Society took a look at it and said, wow, here's some projects that, you know, maybe isn't the time we had planned, but let's get some of this stuff done because we don't have to shut down. We're already shut down. So were you able to accomplish things like that?
We were, actually. And I think I was just telling one of our board members the other day, the museum is in magnificent shape for that old of a building, 1835. And if you'd walk through there today, it's in great shape. And that is because the Historical Society, not just me and us today, but that goes back 100 years or more. And so we're really proud of that. And hopefully we can get people back through the mansion again, because that's one of the jewels of the city. We got to get people in there, Mary.
Well, and you've got to see that one hallway that kind of bounces, and you've got to visit, you know, the kids love all these little extra things. They really get, and they love the spittoon, you know, the idea that you could spit tobacco juice in the house. And I love, whenever I give a tour, I always show the secret compartments in John Wood's desk, you know. Kids at home, they're like, I'm going to go home and I'm going to make a secret compartment so my sister can't find my stuff. And it's, you know, this is the joy of it for adults and for kids. And as we start to reopen, but maybe people aren't ready to take a long vacation trip, maybe they will take a staycation and just come to the John Wood Mansion or come to the History Museum for a half a day and get to know their own city a little bit better.
Well, you know how people are. They say, well, you know, I've been in the mansion. I'm like, okay, when did you come to the mansion? Third grade. All right, you're 50 now, so maybe it's time to get
perhaps
back to the mansion.
Twice in your life, yeah. You can visit the most important building in Quincy, you know. Yeah, I'm always amazed. One thing that I really think they should do, and I mean, again, it's always me putting ideas that I have no business doing because it's none of my business, but I think if you are a freshman orientation at John Wood Community College, I think you should have to tour the Governor John Wood Mansion and learn a little bit about him. And I don't care if they give him one quarter of a college credit, you know, just have them go see that house. They go to the college named for him. They understand maybe a little bit about him, but do they really? And go into that house at 12th and State Street and seeing that beaver fur hat and seeing, you know, seeing those things.
His compass.
Compass, his spittoon, his wife's 18-inch waist or whatever that was on that dress. We laughed about that. I was laughing with the last guest that was on for the Historical Society how we reenact. I said, honey, there's no way. You know, who's going to be Mrs. John Wood? So I think they got Roger Maple. She's the only one skinny enough that could get in the costume. Because I said I had to be his sister, his fat sister from out on the East Coast. Because there again, that's just this one perfect way. You show those kids that this was a grown woman's dress. And a lot of the third grade girls would have trouble fitting into that. And of course, a lot of it was they didn't have the good nutrition we have today. So it wasn't like being skinny was something that was desirous per se. It was just the fact of life. You were short and skinny because you didn't have enough food. But yeah, you call Mike Elby and say,
I'll talk to
Mary
Dr. Elby.
Griffin had a great idea, and Elby will go, really, again? She's always putting more work on other people. Be in charge of that, Mike. Make that happen. But you're right. We don't know enough about our own history, and we really do need to do that. And that's why people love this show so much. John Wood was an interesting gentleman.
Absolutely.
For those who say, well, Mary, we don't know much about him, have Mr. Rob tell us more. What are some of the fascinating facts about John Wood?
I can take just a few points. Obviously, he comes out here as a very young man. And that's interesting in its own right because this is the wilderness. There's nobody living out here, basically.
Yeah, there's nobody here.
He comes out here. He decides to settle here. This was the military tract land, and this land was designated as pensions, if you might say, for the veterans of the War of 1812. He knew that. He knew that they would not all want to come out here and live, so he wanted to find the perfect place to live, and he was going to spend the rest of his life. So he toured, and that's why the Trailblazer, they get their name.
Because he started down in, Pike County, which is...
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was all Pike County.
Well, it was all Pike County. There was no Adams County.
You know,
it was all Pike County.
Cook County was part of Pike County.
Yeah, Pike County was it, baby.
Don't tell the people in Pittsfield that now.
Yeah, Pittsfield. Don't say anything against Cook County. They was once you.
But he was out here for a while, and then, of course, the city springs up. He becomes incredibly wealthy. He gets involved. Almost every day we uncover a little something. He's involved in getting public education to Quincy. He's involved in the gold rush. He has a gold rush. He's involved in the very first anti-slavery society. He's involved in the formation of the Republican Party here from the county. He's involved in the formation of the county itself. I mean, he's involved in almost every aspect of it. Of course, he serves as mayor several times, lieutenant governor, governor, and then he runs the state, obviously, and then he builds that huge octagonal mansion. Unfortunately, we mentioned it's not here anymore.
We've got to save these older buildings, folks. We've got to do it.
I mean, that one, if we have pictures of that, people see it, and they're like, where's
wow.
that? I want to
yeah,
see that.
It.
Fortunately, it's not here anymore.
He was also the quartermaster general
he
for
a
while.
He was the quartermaster,
yeah.
And he served as a colonel. When he served as a colonel in the Civil War, he was in Harper's, and we have this image in Harper's of him with his sword high, and he's over in Missouri running the rebels away. So, and he was 60 years old at the
and
time.
Then later he said, but come back across the river after the war and buy all of our merchandise, because that's the way Quincy and Missouri have always been. Please come.
He was a bigger man. You know, most people don't realize that. They see his picture or so forth. He was actually a pretty large man, a large booming voice, very gregarious, liked to have company, liked to have people around him. His friend Willard Keyes, just the opposite, very quiet and reserved. There's the famous story where somebody goes up to Keyes and says, is John Wood around today? And he says, I'm pretty sure he is. I heard him whisper from across town just a few minutes ago. So that was John Wood.
That was John Wood, yeah. So, you know, folks, when this reopens and when they can get back even in small family groups, what a great thing to do for your own children so that they can always say, I understand a little bit about where I came from. Because even if your family just moved here, you know, it's good to know about what is now your hometown. You should really understand how it got to be and how it all came to pass. The steamboats and the railroads and all of that. When people want to support the Historical Society, or if somebody has something that they think is historically significant, because a lot of times some people think it's a real treasure, and frankly, it probably doesn't have much historical significance. But they can always run it past the Historical Society. You accept gifts, but you also refuse a lot of things, too.
Well, it has to have a connection to the city or the county. You know, we don't take things of historic value just to take them in.
Right.
It has to have that specific connection. But that is one of the great ways to support the Historical Society, one of the greatest ways. Obviously, we love donations, and in becoming a member, we want people to be involved. But if we can keep those treasures here, people who've collected things and they've been handed down in their family, we don't want them to end up in the hands of these groups coming in from the outside and just auctioning it off and making money. We want to keep it here. Things that are valuable to us, documents from the past, pictures from the past, real connections to things that have happened here in Quincy. We're here to protect it and preserve it for the future, forever, for everybody.
Okay. And if you'd like to make a contribution, of course, these times are
lean. Do that too, Mary.
They're lean. They would love to have you at the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. Sounds like April. Some big things are going to be happening. Hopefully, many people will be immunized by then. We'll be able to reopen our museums, reopen the John Wood Mansion, have some of the tours, have some of the trolley tours and things. And remember, it all happens because of the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. Becoming a member gets you on the Governor's Post magazine list. That's a wonderful publication. There's just so many great things to do. So either go to HSQAC or call, and this is great, you'll never forget the number if you remember when John Wood's mansion was built, 222-1835.
That's
222-1835. Real quick, top of the segment thing, put you on the spot. Somebody told me the other day that there's a law in the United States of America that when one president leaves office, he still has control over the military for 60 days after his term expires.
No, that's not true. I don't know where that came from.
Well, it came from this idiot that told me this and said, you know, Donald Trump is still in charge of the military. I said, really? That would amaze me. But
no.
He was very sure it was true.
There's probably some sort of provision that if for some reason the next president can't take over, that there's some sort of protection.
Right.
I'm sure in the U.S. code there's something of that nature, but it's certainly not the case. Obviously, the person who
is able to do it, they're doing
well. If they're president, they're commander in chief.
Right. Well, you know, this is how this stuff happens. And I said, I will ask someone who will know, a military man. He will know who he's still answering to. So if Donald calls you and says, get your boots and get back over to Saudi Arabia. You can say, I'm sorry, sir, I'm not going unless
you're I'll be respectful, but I'll say, you know, I have to follow the commander-in-chief.
I'm not going unless Joe says I've got to go, right? Well, we're so glad to have you home safe and sound, Rob, and we appreciate it. And remember, the fourth Friday of every month, we always talk about the Historical Society, so join us then. State of the City Address, Mayor Kyle Moore, my guest Monday.